Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, we're right in the middle of a rousing discussion about IRAs. IRAs, the number one, besides the house, probably the number one investment people have. And you want to talk again this week about how IRAs work in with estate planning. And people can review last week's discussion at legacyandfaith.com.
Yeah.
And you were talking about some rule changes.
Yeah. So now, when we use the term IRA in our discussion here, I'm talking about any account that is tax deferred. So that could be a Roth IRA. That's tax deferred. It's just that it's after tax money. So when you pull that out, that becomes out tax free. But I could be if you have a 457, a 401k, a 403b, a IRA, a simple IRA, a SEP plan, all of these different types of accounts are all tax deferred. This is what I mean when I talk today about an IRA. So I'm not pigeonholing one type of an account. I'm talking about them broadly. I'm just using the term
IRA. Any investment that has the tax deferred situation.
Yeah, that's right. And so just for some terminology, make sure we're all on the same page as we start out today. And last week we talked about IRAs and a few of the changes that have come down. Again, you can review some of those changes and just in general what IRAs do for an individual. And we just got into the discussion of looking at IRAs and what happens when someone passes away, because that's where the big changes occurred several years ago. So I wanted to take a moment because it is still a little bit of a new concept of changing from a stretch out IRA, which means that when you died, a beneficiary could take it for the rest of their life, little by little. Very similar to a required minimum distribution, an RMD. But that has changed. Now there's a 10-year rule. So
even for a spouse who's the beneficiary.
Well, we'll okay. Get to spouses.
Right.
So there are multiple opportunities for spouses.
Okay.
But the general rule is to a non-spouse, to someone who is not that a spouse, the general rule then is that you must unwind your inherited IRA within 10 years.
Okay.
And what that is doing is it's speeding up the taxing system, right? It's speeding up that you have to take more and it has to unwind by 10 years. And last show we talked about that oftentimes a beneficiary may be in their 50s or their earning power is at the highest of their lifetime. Now they get thrown more income with an inherited IRA, and so their income tax bracket is even higher than what it
typically is. So in some ways, they kind of don't really want that extra money right now.
Right, and that was the benefit of a lifetime stretch, which is you could take a little bit of it, and you could kind of – you had better opportunities to plan around – the inheritor's taxing brackets, and that's been lost to a large degree because of the 10-year rule. So so there is some strategy still, and an inheritor is required to take a certain sum, very similar to the RMDs. So they can't just sit on it. When the rule first came out, there was no guidance as to whether someone had to take some of the IRA or whether they could just let it sit there for 10 years and grow and then take it all at the 10th year. So there's been a clarification that an inheritor, so if you've inherited an IRA since 2020, then you are required to take a minimal amount, a required minimum distribution, very similar to the old rule, but you don't have to take 10%, for example. So
what is the percentage?
It's the same rules. It's a single life table. It's a mathematical calculation based upon how much is in the inherited IRA versus the age of the beneficiary.
Okay.
So it's a similar mathematical equation, but it sets how much must be taken over the 10 years, which means that you could still have a pretty hefty amount. So if you only took the smaller amount as a beneficiary – for those first 10 years, in year number 10, there is going to be a substantial amount of money still left in this account, and you'd have to unwind it in totality there.
In totality.
So,
okay.
So therefore, there is some strategy. So if I was a couple years from retiring, I'd probably take my small amounts as a beneficiary and then increase the amounts after I've retired because my income theoretically may have gone down. So then
you can afford the taxes.
Then. Yeah. So then the tax hit is not as big as if I was taking it during my working years. So there's still a little bit of wiggle room in how a beneficiary may look at an inherited IRA, but definitively not as much as the old rule, which was a lifetime stretch out. Now we are under a 10-year rule. And so now the amounts need to be withdrawn much faster for a beneficiary.
So what are some of the exceptions then to this 10-year rule?
Yeah, there are exceptions. And you've hit one of them, which is a spouse. So a spouse has kind of two different scenarios. They can take it as their own IRA. Now, that's been the way the system has worked for a very long time. The government is typically nice to surviving spouses, I say typically, and that they don't penalize them for losing a spouse. So they would allow a surviving spouse to take that the decedent's amount and literally put it into their own account, okay, a rollover, for lack of a better term. So they would roll it into their own account under their own Social Security number. And depending on their age and whether they're already taking RMDs, the system would continue. It's just that now their calculations would be a little bit more because they have more IRA money in their own personal account. This allows a surviving spouse to use the same system, which is I want to make sure that I have an IRA for the rest of my life if that was very important. Now, a spouse could also, and there might be times when this is a good decision. It may not sound like a good decision, but it could be a good decision, which is they could start the 10-year clock. So they have different options versus a non-spouse beneficiary. They must take the 10-year rule. Okay. So spouses have options. And why would a spouse want to start the 10-year clock? One of the most obvious that come to the top of my head is that if a surviving spouse is already ill or needing long-term care, they have higher medical expenses, then having the 10-year clock start may be good because we can unwind some of that 10-year rule before it gets handed off to the other beneficiaries. And so, so with the higher medical deductions on a 1040, it can eat up more of the IRA income. So there could be a strategy, again, looking holistically at the family of how to make that work. A spouse has options, but a non-spouse beneficiary does not have options. Now, there's other exceptions as well. One of the most obvious that makes sense to us is if there is a minor beneficiary. Now, if you're out there listening in the listening world of radio and you have a beneficiary on your IRA and they are a minor, that is not good estate planning to start with.
Okay.
Because when a minor inherits an account, that is going to be under court supervision for that minor until that minor reaches the age of 18. So So leaving a minor as a beneficiary is typically not advised by almost any estate planner I know. So if you have minors and if you have them as beneficiaries or even as contingent beneficiaries, there's a better way to do estate planning than to leave minors on as beneficiaries on almost any account.
Can the trust be the beneficiary?
Yes, if you have a trust, and that would be a better way to do estate planning instead of using a will, which is typically an outright document. So most wills, in the simplicity of them, they are check writing instruments. And so if you have minors that you have not put a trust in place for, whether it's in a will or whether you've developed a revocable living trust, then court supervision over that money is going to be a part of the deal. So leaving a beneficiary as a minor or a minor as a beneficiary, I guess that's the proper way to do it. Might as well use proper English. Then typically there are better ways to do estate planning. But you got to get to an estate planner that you're going to trust and that you're going to be able to blend with. You can head over to legacyandfaith.com. You can give us a call. We'd love to sit down and look at your situation. But you're going to need to look specifically at what needs to be done for better estate planning. So if you have a minor who inherits an IRA because they were named as a beneficiary, then the minor is going to be able to take lifetime distributions, so that equals small distributions, when they are a minor. But when they hit the age of 21, then it will switch to a 10-year clock with the remaining portions. So while they are a minor, plus a couple years, but it's been defined as 21 years old for IRAs. So during the time that they are under the age of 21, that would be a proper way to say it. So 20 years or younger, they can take small by small by small, but they will be required to take some of the income. Then at the age of 21, it will flip to a 10-year clock. Then they will be on the 10-year rules that we've discussed, which is you have to take a little bit, but you can wait longer, or you can most beneficiaries are going to, again, take 10% each year out of that IRA and wear it down with equal payments. A minor is one exception. There are other exceptions to the 10-year rule. If you are deemed to be permanently disabled, so if you have a child that is a special needs child, they are permanently disabled, or if you've been deemed permanently disabled, then you are not going to be under the 10-year rule. You will be under the old rule of the lifetime stretch, okay? So you'll be able to take little by little for the rest of your life. Now, I like that rule because individuals who need long-term assistance, who need to preserve their finances, again, one of the things I stated in our last show, can be found at legacyandfaith.com, was that the government wants to make sure that IRAs for those who need assistance are going to have it as long as possible.
Can take care of themselves,
so,
as opposed to the government doesn't have to.
That's right. So as much as possible, we don't want people on Medicaid, so we don't want to speed up the process for those who are going to need assistance. So permanently disabled, the philosophy or the general thought is that you're going to need money for a longer period of time, so therefore we're going to let you take little by little, and that's a better taxing system that's good for that individual. So there's a few more exceptions, but we're going to hit those right after break.
Okay, people are intrigued by your approach to how IRAs work into estate planning, and they want to find out more about your services, Paul. How do they do that?
Yeah, I just mentioned it, legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. It can all be found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show. featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Paul is walking us through some of how IRAs work in estate planning. And you were talking about some exceptions to this 10-year rule. You have a few more there.
Yeah, there are a couple more. So we've talked about a spouse has options, minor children, permanently disabled. And so if you've been deemed to be critically ill, so I'm not a medical doctor, but so if you are critically ill, in other words, doctors have determined that there is no availability of medical assistance for you to recover and live a and get you back into health, then critically ill individuals can again go to a lifetime stretch. Why? Because critically ill doesn't mean you're going to die tomorrow.
But we'd like you to be paying for your own
it's a health
support
issue.
As long as possible.
Yeah, that's right. So so can you survive for multiple years even though you've been deemed to be critically ill? I believe the answer is yes. Again, I'm not a medical doctor. But so if you're critically ill, then you can likewise use a lifetime stretch out. And you, in other words, use little by little, because if that illness lasts much longer, we want those funds to be available for you. But even under the lifetime stretch, so here's something. If you're permanently disabled or if you're critically ill, it doesn't mean that you cannot use more than the small amount. It means that you get the luxury of being able to defer those taxes for a longer period of time. So critically ill, you just mentioned that right there, Mark, which is what if they need more? No problem. They could cash the whole thing out in year number one to pay for their medical expenses. It's just that they get the luxury of having a lifetime stretch if they so chose to not have it.
And for tax reasons, you might want to do that.
Right. And so or if you have sufficient money and you're going to leave that to your beneficiaries. There's multiple reasons why a critically ill individual may not want to actually pull out a lot of the IRA money and have it taxed currently. So just because you're on a lifetime stretch, the old rule, because if you meet one of the exceptions, it doesn't mean that you can't take more. It just means that you're not required to take it within 10 years. Another one, which is an oddity one, but I understand the thinking in it, which is if you are within 10 years or less of the decedent's age. So my little brother is 3.5 years younger than me. If I had no children, I have 2 older brothers and 1 younger brother. So if I left my IRA to my 3 brothers – then all 3 of them would qualify that they are less than 10 years younger than me. So in other words, someone who is 10 years younger or less. That means someone who's older fits that category.
Right.
And anyone who is 10 years younger or less of the decedent can use a lifetime stretch. So if I died, left that to my brothers, all of them could use a lifetime stretch, the old rule, for receiving my inheritance regardless of how old I am. Now, I'm not suggesting that I would want to leave my IRA to my brother and then trust him to distribute it to my girls, because that could be one way around everything. My girls are over the age of 21, so they would have to cash out any IRA if I were to die, and they would have to cash it out within 10 years, right? Well, one strategy, I could give it to my brother. He could take little by little over his lifetime and distribute it back out to my girls. That's a lot of hassle to save a little bit of taxes. It depends on how big that IRA is again. If it's several million dollars, then is the final number worth considering? Well, boy, that must be one really trustworthy brother. Not only that, but
yeah, I don't know how you enforce that.
But then, yeah, you don't. It's just a moral obligation. But then that money is going to be counted in his estate. So if he already has a good estate size, there may be an estate tax on that money. And so really, when you start playing these tricks in these games of trying to save a little bit of taxes, usually it bites you and it's really not as fluid and as good of an idea as what maybe someone has pontificated about. So it's really meant for maybe someone who doesn't have children and they're leaving it to siblings, like what my first example was. So they leave it to a spouse, then they leave it to siblings. That's really where this rule would come into play, is within 10 years or younger. Within 10 years of the decedent's age. One thing I haven't mentioned, one other exception that's always been the rule, just came to mind, which is charities. So charities don't have to pay any tax. Charities can then receive the whole amount and of the IRA, and we have no tax consideration. So whether or not it's directly
even though
to
it was
a charity,
a tax-deferred IRA, they can get it without taxes.
Yes, that's right. And so if I listed that a charity received the entire sum, they're going to take that entire sum. And now they've received it pre-tax in totality. They don't pay any income tax because charities don't pay income taxes. And let me mention this just as a little bit of an FYI. I'm going to go backwards to when you are alive, okay? So nobody's died in my story here. I'm taking a brief backwards section. Leaving money or having charitable intent during your lifetime, you can use your IRA up to $100,000. It satisfies your RMD and the charity gets 100%. So for example, if during my lifetime I'm over 73 and a half now in my story, I'm required to take a minimum distribution, and I am tithing to my church. And I know that that tithe amount is blank many dollars. Well, I can give that potentially in one lump sum, and I can maybe even at the end of the year, at the beginning, at the end, you can do it at several different times, quarterly or whatever is good. You can give it to a DAFT, a tax-deferred account at different institutions. And so you can take the amount that you're tithing and you can take it in one lump sum from your IRA, and that would be a part of your required minimum distributions, but the institution gets the full sum. In other words, it doesn't come to your hands first, where it's added to your taxes. Then you get the charitable deduction. Rather, it works that you get the full amount going to the charity. It's a wonderful thing. Talk to your financial advisor about how to give from your IRA if you're already taking RMDs. It's a fabulous opportunity to give more to the charity, and it will actually save you taxes in the at the end of the day.
Do we have time to address that occasional thing that happens, which is no one was named a beneficiary in the IRA?
Yeah, we do. And those are the exceptions to the 10-year rule. So here's the unfortunate one is when you don't leave any beneficiary. I see this oftentimes with single individuals who have no children. They're not sure who to leave. Younger account holders. So if somebody is taking advantage and they're in their 20s or their 30s and that heartbreaking situation happens where they've passed away and they haven't left a beneficiary. It happens oftentimes in divorces where spouses are left, but then that was never done. So there's a couple things. Number one, when you use a financial institution, many financial institutions have written rules into their contract. So whenever you sign that piece of paper, you say, okay, Vanguard, Schwab, Fidelity, whoever you are using as the account, ultimate account holder, there are rules in there. There's a contract you're signing, and oftentimes an institution has a set of rules that they will go look for. The most common one is, we'll go find if you have a spouse. If your spouse, then they are the first beneficiary, even though you forgot to name somebody. If you have children, we'll name them as the second beneficiary, even though you forgot. If you have a sibling, then we'll name them even though you forgot.
There's an order to it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, if we get through all that, and most, a lot of them don't even have that many, they just say, if you have a spouse, then we'll give it to them. If you have kids, we'll give it to them. Otherwise, it goes to the estate. If it goes to the estate, or if you intentionally name your estate because you're not sure who, because you're thinking, oh, I'll let the will do the work, then it's a 5-year rule instead of a 10-year rule. Okay. In most circumstances, there can be times when it's immediately cashed out. Don't have enough time to go into those specifics, but the general rule is that you're going to cut the time in half. It's going to be under a 5-year rule. And here's the other bummer. Now we're going to go through probate with that asset because it came to your estate. Mm. So if the financial institution hasn't saved you, that money is coming to your estate. That is going to go through probate, similar to a house and other assets that you don't have beneficiaries on. And now we're walking through the probate system with that asset instead of using a beneficiary. So yes, it happens. And you need to make sure that you have someone named, a spouse, kids, and if not, siblings or charities, anyone else that you care about. Make sure you have beneficiary designations. It defaulting to the estate is unfortunately not a really good scenario. Faster taxes and then usually goes through probate to get it wrapped up.
Okay. Looking at how IRAs work in estate planning this week, I think we still have some more to go on this show. We'll check into it next time. People are intrigued by your approach to this subject, Paul. How do they find out about your services?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's a lot of information, ways to communicate with us, past podcasts, if I could say that correctly at the end of the show, and ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.